You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast at savage.love.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Hey, we've got a great show for you today. One of my favorite longtime regular guests drops in. But first, the opening of the show, I couldn't pick just one topic for the opening of this week's show. So think of this as a pre-Christmas clearance rant. The Chris Noth or Noth sexual assault allegations, which are horrible, didn't ruin the Sex and the City reboot for me because I wasn't watching the Sex and the City reboot, because I didn't watch the original Sex and the City series or the movies. I am not casting aspersions on anyone who liked the show or loved the show and still loves it. I have admitted publicly to binge-watching 90 Day Fiancé. I am in no position to judge or shame anyone for their television preferences. Some good news for sex workers. The Supreme Court last week ruled that sex workers must be treated like all other workers and citizens. Same legal rights, protected by the same labor laws, full legal recognition, full benefits. But this was the Supreme Court of India that handed down that ruling last week. We can expect much less and much worse from our Supreme Court. Joe Manchin. Fuck Joe Manchin. I want that on a flag. Can I get that on a flag? Or is waving stupid and insulting flags around only okay if you're a Republican? Billie Eilish. Oh, God, she was so, so good on Saturday Night Live a couple of weeks ago. So funny. She killed it. If she wasn't already one of the biggest pop stars in the world, they should make her a cast member. And she went straight from SNL, as you may have heard, to the Howard Stern show, where she had some things to say about porn that upset a lot of porn performers and consumers. She apparently started watching hardcore porn at age 11, which is too young. And when she started having partnered sex, she wound up doing things that she didn't like, but that she thought were expected of her because she'd seen them in porn. Eilish also said that she wished that porn didn't exist and she could destroy it or end it. Disagree with that, but Eilish's overarching point that porn can warp a young person's view of sex and their expectations of their partners, of what sex is, of what's normal or what can be expected of them or what they should want, and how all of that can leave a person feeling pretty horrible about their first sexual experiences, that's all something we've talked about on this show a lot. And we are pro-porn and pro-porn performers and pro-sex work around here. I just wanted to throw into the Eilish conversation again, wanted to emphasize again that, yeah, porn is out there and it's going to stay out there. And we need better sex ed that promotes porn literacy among young people before they're sexually active. They need to know that what they're watching is what someone else wanted or someone else thought other people wanted or wanted to see. The question that kids need to ask themselves before they become sexually active is, what do you want? That's what you should do. That and early on, only that. Plenty of time to explore and get more adventurous and be GGG later. Sarah Palin last week told a crowd at a conservative conference that she'd be getting the vaccine over her dead body. At that point, seems like a little late for the vaccine, but hey, whatever it takes. Speaking of holidays, happy solstice, hippies. And this might be the year I finally do it. This might be the year I finally watch Love Actually. I've never seen this problematic holiday classic, but I watched the trailer last night and yeah, it might finally happen. I might finally watch this movie from 1992 or whatever. I will, of course, live tweet it if I do. Speaking of holiday movies, we watched the gay remake of Get Out last night. It's on Netflix. It's called Single All the Way. And man, it answers the question, could a supportive family drive a gay child to suicide? And the answer is yes, yes, it could. It's Christmas on Saturday. Merry Christmas to all who celebrate. And if you're going through it right now, and a lot of us are going through it right now, but if Christmas puts you through it every year and you're going through it squared, my heart goes out to you. It really does. And remember, if your family of origin is awful to you for whatever reason, you don't have to show up to get punched in the face just because it's Christmas. You also don't have to show up to get set up on a date with your mom's personal trainer. You do not have to show up for that either. And if you're alone this Christmas, please know that you're not alone in being alone. There are a lot of people out there who are alone. That is cold comfort, I realize. But you can make it your New Year's resolution to find and really connect with a few people who are as alone as you are or feel as alone as you do, so you can keep each other company next Christmas. All right, one last thing before we get to the show, last minute Christmas gift suggestion. Give the gift of the Magnum Savage Lovecast. More questions, more answers, more guests, twice as much of the show, and no ads, plus a special monthly hangout with me for our Magnum subs. Gifting someone a subscription is easy. Just go to savage.love, click on Lovecast, click on subscribe, click on buy a gift. All right, coming up on today's show on the Micro and Magnum, Mistress Matisse, my friend for years, longtime guest. She's here to answer a couple of listener questions about whether sex work is right for them. Mistress Matisse is on the Micro and also on the Magnum. All that coming right up. Me Undies makes feel-good underpants your butt will be proud to wear and you will be proud to be seen in. They will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own. And to check it out yourself, go to MeUndies.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by OMGYes.com, a website dedicated to getting scientific truths out about women's sexual pleasure. Savage Lovecast listeners get a special discount at OMGYes.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Pill Club, the birth control subscription that's delivered right to your door. Get a special care package with your first delivery. Go to thepillclub.com/savage.
Hi, I'm a 41-year-old queer woman living in the Midwest. I've been with an amazing partner for the past 4 years. He made it clear to me from the beginning that he did not do monogamy, which I was really fine with after getting out of like a 15-year basically sexless relationship. We have been largely monogamous up to this point, but recently I decided to sort of put myself out on one of the apps and I ended up meeting somebody and we started hooking up. She made it pretty clear that she wasn't interested in a relationship, and I was really fine with that because of where I'm at in my life. But I am the type of person that if I have sex over a period of time with somebody who I actually like, I'm going to feel something. So I brought that up to her last week, mainly as just needing clarification, just needing to hear either, hey, I feel the same way, or no, I don't. It's just sex. I was fine either way. I just needed some clarification. So her answer to me was, well, this has been on my mind as well. I've been writing things down and I've been discussing things with other people, which I unfortunately took to mean that she had feelings for me as well, and spent the next 4 days talking to my partner, talking to my therapist about how we could make more of a poly-style relationship work. I had a follow-up phone conversation with her a couple days ago, only to find out that I completely misunderstood her and she does not have any feelings for me at all. What she had been talking about to other folks was just that she thought I was having feelings for her and she didn't reciprocate them. So I was pretty overwhelmed just by the magnitude of the misunderstanding. I got pretty upset and we decided to stop seeing each other. And now I think she probably thinks I'm a basket case who could not possibly engage with her without like falling madly in love and hurting myself. But like, that's not true. And I feel like we just threw away a really good, fun thing over a non-issue that could have easily been clarified if her answer had just been a little bit more direct last week. So my question is it worth reaching back out to her to try to clarify things and see if there's really a chance to continue things, or should I just cut it off and move on?
So you were having feelings and you shared those feelings with her and she let you know that she was having feelings about your feelings, but they weren't the feelings that you hoped she was feeling about your feelings. Her feelings about your feelings were it was kind of a violation of the terms of the relationship for you to have feelings at all. And now you have feelings about that you want to share with her. And yeah, you can. You can put it all in a letter. You can give her a call. You can send her a link to this week's show and let her listen to what you had to say. But if she's afraid of continuing to see you because you caught feelings and hoped she had feelings too, well, then her concern is that continuing to fuck you is to encourage you and, you know, continue to have those feelings, or when she's sleeping with you, that you may have ulterior motives. You may tell her that it's fine if she doesn't have feelings for you, but then be hoping the whole time that you're fucking, be hoping and fucking that she will develop the same kinds of feelings for you. And if she knows she never will, maybe she doesn't want to, I don't know, disappoint you further or again and hurt your feelings. But it's possible that she misses the great sex that you are having. And you know, it sometimes happens when you have a FWB relationship with someone, or not even an FWB relationship with someone, an actual relationship with someone, that someone has feelings or more intense feelings than the other person at different times. And that's okay. That's a risk we take when we take our clothes off and get into bed with people. But she doesn't want to sleep with you again. Go find somebody else who does. And now that you know, or you knew all along kind of, that sleeping with somebody on the regular, that you typically catch feelings for that person, well, that's something that you should disclose. That's something that you should put on the table when you start sleeping with someone regularly. That for you now, knowing what you know about yourself, you're open to poly, open to things moving in a poly direction. If that's scary for someone who only wants a casual sex partner, well, then you're not the right casual sex partner for them. In which case, maybe you scared off this woman and maybe it's good that she ran screaming, because you're not what she wants and she can't give you what you want, and you will have more feelings about that and they won't be good. So she's just trying to spare your future bad feelings, or spare you those future bad feelings. But that clears the field for you to go find new sex partners who are open to you, feeling feelings, who might have feelings for you too in return, and that you can have a more poly-style relationship with.
Hello, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I am in my early 20s and live in New England. I discovered your podcast a few months ago, and it has been revolutionary, empowering, and authenticating to me discovering polyamory. I have recently joined the apps, in particular Field, which has also been just as empowering and authenticating, seeing those with a similar lifestyle or way to love than I do. So I matched with a gentleman who's visiting from the other side of the country, and he talked to me for a month before we decided to meet up, texting, calling every day, and he decides he's going to come over and visit. He tells me the day before he comes over, you know, he's tired of being used as a sex toy. He's really looking for a connection beyond compatibility, regardless of whatever happens. He doesn't just want to be used for sex and looks forward to carrying on some sort of connection. So he asks me before he comes up if he can bring a girl that he met on the apps a couple weeks prior, this beautiful girl from a few states away. I say, this is beautiful. I'd love to have both of them. So they come over. We have an absolute beautiful, what I thought to be spiritual and transcendental experience. And we have a beautiful night all together, and I'm more connected to the girl more so than him. I feel like me and her did a lot of eye gazing, a lot of cuddling, a lot of massaging, and we felt really close to each other. I think I might have stole the show a little bit, and I think I maybe made him a little bit uncomfortable that me and her had a greater connection. Well, the next day, I didn't get her number, and I texted him after they left, and I say, I had a beautiful night with you two. I can't wait, you know, I hope you guys have a sweet day. Well, he doesn't answer me and ghosts me for 2 days, and then answers me and tells me me and him weren't compatible, and that him and her are not looking to further a connection with me, and then he blocks me on everything. This left me feeling quite vulnerable and insecure. You know, my biggest issue is he gatekeeping this girl from me. You know, I don't have her number. Do I have a long lost lover 2 states away? Is he telling her that he doesn't want, that I don't want a connection with her? You know, like, I understand I can't force someone to want a connection with me. But now I just feel like, is he telling this girl that I don't want a connection with her? Do I have a long lost lover? And how can I avoid this in the future? I feel like it was pre-negotiated, that he was looking for connection, beyond compatibility, and he was talking to me every day for a month. And now I'm just left cleaning up the mess of everything, and I'm blocked. So I'm just wondering, you know, I've been feeling very safe in my polyamory. I've been cradled by couples. I've been cradled by other poly people. And this just left me feeling very vulnerable and kind of unsafe of poly space. And I'm just wondering, moving forward, how do I protect myself better? Should I have asked for her number first? Like, where's my long lost lover, Dan? Let me know what you think. What should I do?
Your long lost lover is on Field. That's what the guy told you who arranged this three-way that he met this woman a couple of weeks ago on the same app where he met you. So you know where she is, or you might be able to find her, or she might be able to find you. And if the connection is as intense for her as it was for you, and this guy, because his feelings got hurt, is running interference and trying to twat block the both of you from hooking back up again, well, then she's probably back on field or may still be on field, and there is a way that you two could find each other. Field says about itself that it is a hookup app for people interested in casual sex, polyamory, kink swinging, and other alternative sexual preferences. This guy, during the month that you guys were chatting, he told you that he was looking for something ongoing, that he was interested in more than just casual sex. Could have been true. He also could have been lying his face off to get into your pants or to get into her pants. And that's a risk you run when you have a hookup with someone. You know, someone may hook up with you for the first time and have a really good feeling about it and a good feeling about you, and then they didn't enjoy the sex. If it was a three-way and they were left out and they felt that that was inconsiderate, maybe they don't want to hook up with you again because the impression they got during that three-way where they were left out was that you weren't as into them as they were into you, or that you weren't as considerate a lover as maybe they hoped or thought you were. Or it could be that you did nothing wrong. And I always say that to people, don't have fucking three-ways if you can't emotionally handle the fact that invariably during every three-way there are breakout moments where it's a two-way and you're on the outside of it. And if that doesn't sound sexy to you, if watching the two people that you were having a three-way with kind of groove on each other for a moment before they pull you back in or you jump back in is going to hurt your feelings and you're going to be a pouty dick about it for the rest of your life, three-ways aren't for you. Maybe that's what happened here. Maybe he's a pouty dick. Maybe he's just telling you what you wanted to hear to get into your pants. But it was casual sex and it didn't go the way you wanted it to go. That sometimes happens. You're giving him too much power. You're giving him too much thought. Maybe you're going to see these two people again. Maybe not. Maybe she's out there pining for you. Maybe not. Let it roll off your back. Put your ad back up on field. Take a look around for hers. Drop her a note if you find her. And yeah, great. She's as into you and you guys hook back up again. And it's as great as it was that first time when unfortunately he was in the room. You can run off together and be lovers. But if you never hear from her again, you had a really great, intense, fun sexual experience where you really dug one of the two people that you were in the room with. Awesome. Let it go. Don't obsess about it too much. Move the fuck on. And don't blame this on polyamory. Don't like look at this and say, poly people are all liars. Because people into monogamy, people who say they were looking for monogamy will do this exact same thing. Have a change of heart after the first time they hook up with somebody, or lie to somebody to get them to hook up with them, which is not okay, but it happens. And we all have to be braced for it. And when it happens to each of us, as it inevitably does, we have to not be devastated by it. You guys, we've got big news here from Savage Lovecast Industries. Did you hear? Nancy just got her new pajamas from MeUndies, and her middle schooler just got a new plaid onesie, so their house is comfort central. Meanwhile, Terry and I lounge around in our soft, soft lounge pants like the gay men of leisure we are, or we aspire to be. It is divine, especially right now. Houses in Seattle, not well insulated. Our lounge pants, so comfortable. Keep us warm. Keep us cozy. MeUndies. Their undies, their loungewear, their sleepwear, all made out of soft, breathable, stretchy fabrics that are ideal for hanging out by a crackling fire. Get the family photo you've always dreamed of with matching PJ sets, or make every day a spa day with new plush robes and plush slippers. Whatever you decide, everyone will be rolling into the new year comfier than ever before. MeUndies, available in sizes XS through 4XL, and they have something, a little something cozy and comfortable for everyone on your list, including yourself. MeUndies has a great offer right now for my listeners. For any first-time purchasers, you get 15% off and free shipping right to your door. Your days of fighting for your life in the mall parking lot are over. To get 15% off your first order, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you. Go to MeUndies.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. Cash gender person calling from the bad side of Washington with a question regarding labels. My partner was assigned male at birth, but currently is taking gender-affirming hormones to become more feminine. They self-identify as human, basically non-gendered, and feel that the body they were born into should have had a penis, but also breasts and feminine features. Because we are in an extremely conservative place, it's a little scary for them to be fully out, so they live and work as a man out of fear of violence. So we were having a discussion about what our sexualities are. Mine's easy. Even though I'm cast gender and am fully apathetic about gender in general, I know I'm attracted to personality first with zero care about gender. I consider myself demi and pansexual. My partner, though, is also under the agender non-binary spectrum, but they are only attracted to those that present or identify as women. We can't find a label to really fit. If you focus on genitals, then you're ignoring the entire person. But if you only focus on gender, then there's a huge spectrum. So the words straight, gay, bi don't really fit. Pansexual doesn't fit because they aren't attracted to all genders. I've had people suggest that lesbian would work, but that assumes my partner is female gendered. Some suggested queer, but then a queer person said that you can't be queer if you present publicly as a cishet white male. Gynosexual was suggested during the sack lunch, but my partner is fine if a woman has a penis, but maybe that term could work. It seems terms for sexuality haven't caught up with all the possible gender combos out there. So if my partner decides to create a dating profile, what sexuality would they choose to describe an agender person who has a penis that's attracted to women no matter what's in their pants?
I don't know. Maybe there isn't a term for your agendered assigned male at birth mask presenting in public for fear of violence but wishes to obtain other female secondary sex characteristics like breasts at some point. Partner, maybe your partner is so complicated that there's just not an easily understood term that you guys can bandy about on dating apps or whatever that people will immediately grok everything your partner is and how complicated your partner is. You may, because your partner's sexual orientation, gender identity is all so unique and very complicated, just be forced into rattling off to prospective new partners everything you've had to, if that's indeed what you're after here, as opposed to just a term of self-understanding, everything you rattled off for me, because I just don't think there's going to be a single syllable word that's going to come into common everyday use that gets across how very unique and complicated a person your partner happens to be. Gay, straight, bi. Pretty self-explanatory, although in their own ways complicated. There are, you know, you say gay and people just assume penis-having cisgendered males who are attracted to other males. And there are trans guys with vaginas who are gay identified in relationships with gay men who are cis or gay men who are trans. Like, gay is even itself more complicated than sometimes people realize. But I just, if what you're after is that single syllable term, like gay, straight, bi, for your partner, I don't think you're going to find it. And if you coin it, which seems to be what the queer community is all about these days, is coming up with terms for these ever more unique sexual and gender orientations and also combinations, your partner's lived experience is still going to be so unique, and that word, if you can come up with it, and I can't, is not going to be understood by enough people for you guys to avoid, or for you persons to avoid, still having to unpack who your partner is at great length as you did in your question. So even if we could come up with a word, single syllable, where the definition was everything your partner is, you're still going to have to explain it all to the person that you say that word to who doesn't know what that word means because they've never encountered it, because it's not going to come into wide usage because your partner's very unique experience is very unique to your partner. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Oh My God Yes, a website devoted to sexual pleasure. OMG Yes scientists partnered with Indiana University and Yale University researchers and asked tens of thousands of people what they discover is most pleasurable for them. It's a treasure trove. This website is a treasure trove of techniques that you can use on your lover or yourself, or ask your lover to use on you. Here are some of the topics just to entice you: layering, hinting, signaling, orbiting, broadening. These are techniques you may not have thought of or may not even know about or know what that means, but going to OMG Yes, learning about these things will expand your boudoir repertoire, and it's all presented in straightforward and honest videos, animations, data visualizations for men, women, couples, or whatever you've got going on. OMG Yes makes the very best gift. See how much there is to explore, learn what works for other people, and learn what might work for you at omgyes.com. Savage Lovecast listeners get a special discount at omgyes.com/savage. That's omgyes.com/savage.
Okay. My mom actually got me into the Lovecast in the first place, and now she is having me call in. So I'm bi or possibly lesbian. I'm 20 years old, living in Australia, but I'm from the West Coast. I have an interest in sex work, and I've had it ever since I was little, like Diary of a Call Girl and burlesque and all that. I found it all just fascinating and beautiful and kind of alluring. And I also might have a bit of an exhibitionist gene in me. I've always had a sense of being mesmerized by like dark femininity and secrets, and this job, you know, is not exactly the one that you kind of shout from the rooftops if you ever want to get a job in a different industry in the future. But I find myself in the position of needing to pay for being alive, and both stripping and working at a brothel sound quite good. Brothels are legal where I live, and it's flexible hours, flexible commitment, big payday. I've worked in restaurant jobs and retail the last few years, and I'm really good at it, but I hate it. It honestly makes me hate my life. And I feel like this might be a good new option, new direction for me to go in. I think I prefer full-service sex work to stripping, to be honest. Something about it being such a clear transaction, it's so like straightforward. My experience with entry-level jobs is that they all suck, and I've been selling my bodily and emotional labor for years, so I don't get what is like so extremely different in this situation. Like, it's not that I think sex is like so extremely spiritually meaningful to me that I don't want to have it for money. Like, I feel like that feels like a pretty okay thing for me. Like, it doesn't feel gross, but I'm wondering if it might affect me in the future in some different way that I can't really foresee because I'm so young and I don't know all the things I don't know. I guess my other concern is that I don't really know what else I want to do. And everybody says if you like strip or if you work in, I guess, like the sex industry in general, you're supposed to be in it to get out of it. Like, I think you're supposed to have other concrete goals. And I'm a little bit scared that without having other things that I want to do, then I might just end up finding the environment to be like a slippery slope. I also feel lazy for not wanting a job that produces something for society, but that feels like a sneaky voice of capitalism speaking from inside my own head. I feel like this job could actually really help people and also give me the freedom that I want in my own life.
Joining me to help tackle this question, a frequent guest who needs no introduction but deserves one, Mistress Matisse, sex worker, sex workers' rights advocate, professional dominant, author, columnist, blogger, all around awesome person, and an old friend of mine. Hey, Matisse, thank you so much for jumping on the phone.
I'm really happy to be here, Dan. It's great.
So I think the first thing we have to bear in mind while we answer this question is her mom is listening. Her mom is a listener. Whatever we tell this 20-year-old about possibly going into sex work, her mom is listening. And that's giving me some anxiety. How about you?
I hadn't thought of it quite that way, but I mean, I actually hope her mom does listen to this so she can hear what, you know, another sex worker has to say about it. And that it's not just like we're not just here recruiting people for the sake of it, right? We're going to talk about this in a really meaningful way.
And I think the first meaningful thing we need to say is sex work ain't necessarily what you saw on television, on Diary of a Call Girl, or when you saw burlesque in the movie theater. There's a big gap between what sex work looks like in fictional representations and what it's like in reality.
That is true. When I was 13, I saw Flashdance and I wanted to be a stripper. And I was astonished to learn when I was older that being a stripper is nothing like the movie Flashdance.
So, would you like to detail all the ways in which it's different than Flashdance?
Well, for one thing, they never did like lap dances or private dances or anything for the guys. They just took off their clothes on stage. And mostly, and I mean, there are a few places in the States where you do that, but mostly you hustle money from the guys individually.
Right. And that requires a lot of emotional labor and sometimes physical, I don't want to say danger.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sales job. It's like walking up to a stranger and saying, hi, you should give me money because I'm sexy and I'll pay attention to you. And that's why you should give me
and
money.
And even if the guys are polite, that you're inviting a lot of rejection. And that can be scalding
for people.
Yeah,
you're
going
to get rejected a lot. Yeah, right. Which kind of takes me to this call, because one thing she said is that she thinks that doing full service would be easier than being a stripper, and she's right. She's correct about that. Being a stripper is a very hard job. It is actually easier, in my opinion, to be a full service escort.
Why is that?
Because being a stripper, there is no situation in life that closely parallels this that isn't a strip club, right? It's a very unique environment. And so people don't have a script for how to behave for that. And so you get people who behave badly. And of course, I'm oversimplifying dramatically, but you see my point.
Mm-hmm.
Being alone with a guy and having sex with him is a thing that people do even when they're not being paid for it.
Okay. Some people would argue that there are lots of examples out there of women who've been alone with men while paying for sex and men who've been alone with men while paying for sex where the client behaved badly. Is it not a similar degree of risk around bad behavior?
Well, I mean, there's talks about like what physical risk you're at, and then there's talk about what job is the most difficult job. And those are two different conversations. I did not say that being a stripper is safer than being a full service escort. It's true, but it's easier job to be a full service escort.
So you've worked in, you visited countries and worked in places where brothels were legal, like Australia. I believe you visited Australia.
Yes, I have. I have visited Australia and I have worked at legal brothels in Australia. And so I'm going to say something now that you've never heard me say before, Dan, and I don't say very often. And that is, yes, I think this young woman sounds like she would do very well as a sex worker. I don't think I've ever said that before about someone I haven't met.
What is it about her call or her question that makes you think she'd do well as a sex worker?
She presented herself and her reasons for wanting to do it in a very clear, mature fashion. She's not making a decision under duress, right? She's not about to be homeless or, you know, about to be in some other dire financial circumstance. And that alone, starting sex work when you're not like up against a wall is a huge benefit because, frankly, a lot of people do get into it when they're really in a financial crunch, but she's not. She does seem to understand that she would be there to facilitate their sexual experience. There was a kind of a red flag where she said something about, I want to explore my sexuality. You don't become a sex worker to explore your sexuality. You become a sex worker to facilitate other people exploring their sexuality. You're there to help them. So you have to keep that part in mind, but the rest of it, I mean, she just sounds really, level-headed and like she would have at least some support from her mother, if not her mother's enthusiastic support. She wouldn't get disowned. And the country where she is, it's legal. So she'll be protected.
There are folks here, speaking of people who go into sex work under economic duress, who argue, and I disagree with this position, I'm just devil's advocating so that you can knock it down or we can knock it down together, who argue that because some people do go into sex work under economic duress, therefore we need to protect people from sex work by criminalizing it, by throwing people who do it into jail to prevent them from going into sex work under economic duress. As a sex workers' rights advocate, what is the response to that argument for criminalization?
All labor under capitalism is exploited labor. Like, how is sex work any different from any other job? You do it because you need the money, and you have to have money to survive. It's not unique in that quality. People want to say, oh, it's somehow uniquely dangerous or uniquely degrading. It's not. airline stewardesses are getting punched out on planes right now, and people who are on school boards are getting death threats. So I'm not really hearing this talk about, oh, we're so uniquely vulnerable because of our jobs. I don't find that to be compelling at all.
Not everybody, though, can emotionally. There is a difference between, you know, you're a flight attendant. And one of the things that's great about being a flight attendant as opposed to being a sex worker in most places is that it's legal to be a flight attendant. And if somebody punches a flight attendant, the cops are going to storm out of the airplane and arrest the person who punched the flight attendant, not the flight attendant.
Right. And that's why sex work must be decriminalized.
And I completely agree. But some people say, and I think I agree with this. Like, I don't think I could do sex work. It would be a big leap for me to, you know, accept money from someone that I wasn't attracted to and let them into my body. I don't know if I could do that. That doesn't mean I don't think people should do sex work. It means I shouldn't do sex work.
Right. And that's why, like, it's definitely not for everyone. And that's why I emphasize, like, this is the first time I've ever heard someone talk and thought, you know, they might actually do okay at this just based on how they sound here, because rarely is that the case. A lot of people, I feel like, maybe you're a little vulnerable. Maybe this wouldn't be the right thing for you. And I don't know, you know, I can't always know other people's experiences, but like she's in a safe place. She can quit when she wants to. She has legal protection. It seems like her family would be there for her. She has a good idea of what to kind of expect going in. She seems to have a very unhung up attitude about sex. She kind of reminds me of me. Like, why shouldn't I have sex for money? It doesn't bother me in the slightest. So, and if she goes and works for a week and then hates it, she can quit. And she's not going to be damaged by that, I don't believe.
How do you define whorephobia?
An irrational fear or hatred of sex workers or the act of sex work based on things like God says it's bad.
Because I think I was guilty of a little bit of whorephobia at the beginning of the response, where I was like, oh my God, her mom is listening. You know, as if all people who do sex work don't have parents, as if in an ideal world, people who do sex work or any kind of work shouldn't have the support of their families and their families to fall back on, right? So me being nervous that mom is listening, I think is a little bit of my residual whorephobia, but I think the caller displays a little bit of their own residual whorephobia in that she puts out there that, like, shouldn't she be going into this with an idea of something else she wants to do? That it's okay to be a sex worker if you're putting yourself through law school. It's not okay to be a sex worker if that's your job, if that's your career, if that's your calling. That's somehow stigmatized if it's what you want to do, as opposed to if it's a means to an end.
Yeah, she definitely has some internalized whorephobia, and we all do. Like, you have to work to unlearn those kinds of things. She's only 20, so I don't expect her to have the, you know, the wisdom and the larger view here. And I felt a lot like her until I was about 30. And I realized I don't want to do anything else. I want to keep being a sex worker. And that's what I'm going to do. So I can kind of relate to her. That I felt like, oh, I'll just do this for a while until something else that I really want to do comes along. And nothing else that I really wanted to do came along. And I tried a lot of things. But I thought, no, this is what I want to do. And, you know, people say it's like, oh, I'm not contributing anything to society. Well, it's a service job, and, you know, a service person doesn't manufacture a thing, but they create an experience. So it's just as valid for her to create her experiences for her clients, and that's contributing something to society, as it is anyone who, like, cooks someone's food or performs in a play or wipes someone's ass when they're sick. Those are all service jobs.
Now I see your job is on a continuum with the guy who dresses up as Prince Charming at Disneyland and provides an experience of getting to interact with Prince Charming to the professional dominatrix. It really is, they're really linked.
I mean, that's the way I see it anyway.
So we have one more question, but before we leave this question, since mom is listening, which still rattles around in my head, your thoughts on the parent anybody doing sex work would benefit from having? Any advice for mom who's supportive of her daughter as she considers going into sex work? If the daughter does go into sex work, as a sex worker, what kind of parent or what kind of support would you have liked to have received from your family when you started doing sex work?
Well, that's a good question. My family kind of knows, and we kind of had this don't ask, don't tell thing that works fine for us. Totally. I'm not saying it's how everyone has to do it. We're fine. What I would want to hear from a mom would be something like, honey, this is your life and you get to do what you want and we're always going to love you unconditionally. And I want you to be safe more than anything in the world. So that's the most important thing. And I hope that at any point when you're embarked upon this adventure, you don't feel safe. You will A, remove yourself from that situation, and B, come to me and I will help you solve whatever problem you think you may have. Like if you need money, but you don't want to quit, I will give you money. If you just need emotional support for a bad day, you can cry and I will hug you. Like just be there for her.
Thank you so much, Mistress Matisse. Everyone who listens to this show and has been listening for a long time has heard Mistress Matisse on the show before. She is such a tremendous font of wisdom and common sense, and you should all be following her on Twitter at Mistress Matisse for a dose of that wisdom and common sense. And before I let you go, I got to say, Matisse, one of the things I love about Twitter and you on Twitter, you've built a huge following. When someone in the mainstream media, someone I like Peter Sagal, Jack Taper, they say something or they comment about prostitution or sex work, and you jump on them and they end up talking with you. And it is so amazing to see people interacting with sex workers who are speaking for themselves and advocating for themselves on this platform. And no one does it, you know, big media people, and no one does it as well as you do.
Well, Dan, you warm my heart. I'm crying a little bit. Thank you. That's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me.
Oh my God. Whenever you started with someone, I always like, oh, I am following this because I am going to be here for when Mistress Matisse wins the round, as she always does.
You delight me. You delight me. All right. I owe you money now for that one.
Follow Matisse on Twitter at Mistress Matisse. And thank you again, Matisse, for jumping on the phone.
Thank you, Dan.
Matisse stuck around for another call about sex work. That's on the Magnum version of the show. If you want to give the Magnum a try, you can get yourself or give someone a month-long subscription and check out all the Magnum Savage Lovecasts we've ever made during that month. There's a ton of content, and you can gorge on the Lovecast over the boring holidays. It's all at savage.love, and we appreciate your support. If you're on birth control, remembering to take your pill is already enough work, let alone going to the doctor to get a refill and picking it up from the pharmacy. Pill Club wants to take the work out of taking care of yourself. The Pill Club is a birth control subscription prescribed by a medical professional and delivered straight to your door for free in discreet packaging. The Pill Club carries over 120 FDA-approved brands. Most brands of birth control are free with insurance or Medicaid. Otherwise, prices start as low as $9 per month without insurance. What's more, the Pill Club's licensed medical team is just a text away to give you the best reproductive health care. So skip the office visit and skip waiting in line at the pharmacy. Join the club. And right now, when you go to thepillclub.com/savage, the Pill Club is offering a $10 donation to bedsider.org for every Savage Lovecast listener who becomes a patient. Your donation will help low-income individuals get access to birth control through bedsider.org. That's thepillclub.com/savage to get your first birth control care package and to donate to help more women in need of affordable birth control. Remember, thepillclub.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you. thepillclub.com/savage. You must use the link to make a donation.
Hey, Dan, I am a mid-40s, not totally straight guy living in the Northeast, and I am having a terrible time attempting to date and meet people. And I'd love to get your expert guidance. I feel like I'm stuck in these undefinable gray areas and it's holding me back. And maybe the issue is that I'm being too picky. So for starters, I only want to connect with people whose orientations like mine fall somewhere in the middle. So while I only date women, I'm 0% interested in dating a straight woman. And while I would love to have a male friend with benefits, I don't want that person to be totally gay. I love looking for a third person together. And I love that three-person energy. I'd love to be in a triad or a throuple someday. And if I'm married, let's say, ideally someday, but my wife is straight, then we can't ever bring a woman into the picture and have everybody participate equally. And that would suck. And if I become besties with some gay guy that I'm fooling around with, we can't ever look for a woman together, or he wouldn't ever want to join me and my future wife. So It just feels very limiting. And when it comes to monogamy versus non-monogamy, well, obviously I can't date anybody monogamous, but I also feel like I'm not poly enough for the polyamorous community. I've been to a bunch of poly mixers and meetups, and I just feel overwhelmed and quite frankly turned off. Like, it seems like everyone I meet there is already married and has two boyfriends and has three girlfriends, and they all go to fucking Burning Man and do psychedelics and they love astrology and live in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And I'm totally being an asshole right now and generalizing, but the point is, it's just not my scene. I don't want to be involved in one of these massive tangled webs with a zillion partners who all have a zillion other partners. I have zero interest in going on separate dates from my primary partner. I want to do all the things, but I want to do it together. And I'm not connecting with people on the apps. You know, I get likes from people on the vanilla apps, but they're vanilla. And I get a lot of likes from gay guys, but I'm just like, I wish I were gayer. So do I need to change my approach? Do I need to be less picky? How do I put myself out there and really find what I want? Like, I'm so good at relationships, in all seriousness, and I hate that I'm single. I don't know how to find my person while still being fulfilled. So please help.
Dude, I promise you, poly people, people who want a large tangled web, they had zero interest in dating you either. And that's fine. That's not what you want. What you want is an open relationship. You want a primary partner, someone that you have an open relationship with. And that's more common. There are more people out there who have or want open relationships than there are people who want or have polyamorous relationships. There are lots of bisexual people out there like you. You aren't required to date or sleep with gay guys. There are bi guys out there that you can date and sleep with. And there are lots and lots and lots of bisexual women out there that you could partner with. So I don't know how you got into this scarcity mindset. I don't know how you got into this place where you think that if you want a partner that you can pick up other people with, that it has to be somebody you pulled from the polyamorous meetup or met at the polyamorous meetup, when that's just somebody more common and more average that you can meet on any fucking dating app. It's easier for you to find what it is that you say that you want than you seem to think. So what is it that you want? You want, you're a bi guy. You're an out bi guy. You would like, and you're heteroromantic, you would like a female partner who is also bi so that you can pick up women together or maybe pick up men together. Good luck. Put that on the dating apps. Make that your ask. Make that your request. Stop frustrating yourself and then frustrating me. Stop frustrating yourself by going and looking for what you want in the place where what you want is not. You don't want a polyamorous relationship. Stop going to the polyamorous meetups. You just want a garden variety, off-the-shelf, basic, open relationship with another bi person. Ask for that from the universe. That's easier to find than a polyamorous relationship. Good luck. All right, before we get to listener response calls, let's read some of those listener tweets. Ina Dahl tweets, since I started listening to the Savage Lovecast whenever I bike, Dan's savory voice and sage advice has ushered me smoothly through the streets of Berlin for hundreds of kilometers, turning each dreaded commute into a sumptuous event. Now out of episodes, time to go Magnum. I completely agree, Ina Dahl. Yes, go Magnum, and you can have hundreds more hours with me and my savory voice. What a great compliment. Thank you so much. Anytime Left tweets, hey, at Fake Dan Savage, what words do you use to describe the sexual orientation of a non-binary person who is only sexually attracted to men or only attracted to women? I'm a therapist who works with a lot of queer teens, and mostly they seem as unsure as I am. Well, there are some to choose from. Androphile, someone who's exclusively attracted to men and or masculinity. Gynophile, someone who is exclusively attracted to women and or femininity. If it's dick, someone's gotta have phallophile. If it's pussy, vaginophile. Not exactly terms that roll off the tongue, but we shortened homosexual to homo. So andro, gyna, phallo, vajo. And finally, Rag in Love tweets, after being Twitter-averse for years, I finally convinced myself to get a Twitter, with my main motivation being tweeting about the Savage Love Cast and the possibility of Dan reading my tweet on the show. There you go, Rage in Love. I think that's what your handle, that's how your handle is supposed to be pronounced. Rage in Love, not Rag in Love. All right. Thank you for tweeting about the show. Sorry I got your name wrong. Thanks to everybody out there who tweeted about the show or posted something on Instagram or Facebook about the show. We really appreciate it. And now something else we really appreciate, listener comments, listener feedback, listener response calls.
Hi, Dan. This call is in response to your monologue at the beginning of episode 790, where you referred to Gold Star Gaze, and you define Gold Star Gaze as a gay man who's never slept with a woman. There are gay women too, though, and lesbians often identify as Gold Star lesbians, and the term is used to be derogatory towards bisexual or pansexual lesbians who lean homoromantic, but maybe don't have such strong definitions about who they date or who they fuck. And it is also used as a very trans-exclusionary term in the lesbian community. My own wife didn't have sex with a man until she was in her 30s, and she just wanted to try it to see, you know, what all the hullabaloo was about. My mother responded to her that she didn't lose her virginity until she had had sex with that man in her 30s, because oftentimes lesbian sex is not seen as real sex. So again, the term Gold Star Gays, Gold Star Lesbians, it's kind of icky, and there's a lot of reasons for that. So that's just my two cents.
Hi, Dan. I'd like to add to the discussion about the expression Gold Star that you mentioned in episode number 790. First, I'd like to remind everyone that queer women also use the term Gold Star. I hope it's largely understood in the queer community that the term is not an insult, but a badge of pride, just as you described it for gay men. But for queer women, there's another facet as well, a feminist one, about never having to sleep with men, as well as not ever having to enter into the particular power dynamic that comes along with sleeping with men. It's about having the good fortune of life circumstances and self-awareness that would allow a person to sidestep the heteronormative setup that was expected of us back in the day. I came out as a lesbian in my early 20s, but before that, I had been very sexually active. I slept with something in the neighborhood of 40 different guys or more, because I was not yet fully aware of my own queerness, and I thought that if I tried enough guys, I might finally find one that did something for me sexually. None of them ever did, and in hindsight, I wish I never had to go through that sexual experiment because it was painful and sad and lonely. I finally figured out my attraction to women, and when I got to have sex with a woman for the first time, it was fireworks and angels singing, and I knew I had finally arrived at where I was supposed to be. Now it's years later, and my current partner is a Gold Star. She knew she was queer as early as elementary school, and she even had a girlfriend in high school in the 1980s, for which she got plenty of ridicule and a few nasty fistfights. But even though she had her own set of negative circumstances, I still envy her Gold Star experience. I wish I had known as a young person that queerness was an option for me. But what was modeled to me in the South in the 1980s was that if you're queer, you got beat up at school. And if you dared to have a same-sex relationship, you could find yourself institutionalized, which did happen to a high school acquaintance of mine. Looking back, I truly wish I'd never had any sexual encounters with men at all, and especially not the acquaintance rape in college. These encounters never would have happened if I had been able to understand my queerness at an earlier age. So to anyone who takes offense at the expression Gold Star, I say they need to calm down and not forget the important historical context from which the term evolved. Many of us had sexual encounters that we didn't want to have because of homophobic and heteronormative socialization. So I say we get to keep the term Gold Star because it has real and important significance to us and our experiences and our history.
Hey, vagina owner here, responding to the cum girl. Regarding coming your veg, I say embrace the gersh. It's not going to ruin your panties. You don't need a pad unless you're fucking a superhero. And I kind of love the hours later reminder gersh and texting my partner something like, hey, I just got out of the car and your cum leaked out of me. I think it's a playful hot reminder that I got a load shot in me earlier. Regarding anal, Dan was right. You can expel the cum afterwards, which you should be doing anyway, because peeing after sex, especially anal, is really important because UTIs suck so bad. And I often end up expelling cum while straining to pee after having anal orgasms. Or you could just make him suck it out of you, like the good boy I'm sure he is.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for next week's show or something to say about something I said on this week's show? The best way to get us your questions and your comments is to use the voice memo app on your phone to record your question or your comment and then email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. You can also call us at 206-302-2064. The Hump 2022 Film Festival will be playing in theaters in Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, and Olympia in January, February, and March with all new smutty films. We just put together the lineup. It is one of the best humps ever, and we are so excited to be getting back into, fingers crossed, theaters in the new year. Tickets are on sale now, and as a special gift, every purchase of Hump tickets comes with a free one-month subscription to the Magnum Savage Lovecast. Go to humpfilmfest.com to grab your tickets and claim your Magnum Lovecast subscription today. And on Thursday, January 6th, instead of hosting a sack lunch with Savage Lovecast Magnum subscribers, we will be hosting Happy Sack, a happy hour Zoom at 6 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 p.m. Eastern. And to mix it up, we'll be playing a few rounds of raunchy games as one Magnum-sized happy family. Be on the lookout for more details coming to you soon via email to Magnum subscribers. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Mistress Matisse on Twitter at Mistress Matisse. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at Rescue and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week for an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.